I don't like this any more than you. We've got 3,000 colonists left in Zero Tau. What are you going to tell them when we get to the Principality? I've no idea, though once they hear what's actually happening down on the surface, I doubt they'll complain. Captain Montgomery thought about the fleck in her breast pocket with a glimmer of guilt. The reports they'd been receiving from Durringham over the past week were pretty garbled, too. Maybe they were better off leaving. At least she could transfer the responsibility to the ambassador when the line company started asking questions. "How soon before we can leave orbit?" Sir Asquith asked. "As soon as Kieran gets back. You know you had no right to send him on a flight like that." "We can wait for 2 more orbits. I'm not leaving without my pilot." "If they're not airborne by then, you don't have a pilot any more." She turned her head to look at him. "Just what is going on down there?" "I wish I knew, Captain, but I can tell you I'm bloody glad we're leaving." The McBoeing undocked as the Equon moved into the penumbra. Its pilot fired the orbital maneuvering rockets, and it dropped away into an elliptical orbit which would intercept Lalonde's upper atmosphere. Equon started her pre-flight checks, testing the ion thrusters, priming the fusion tubes. The crew scurried through the life support capsules, securing loose fittings and general rubbish. "Got him," the navigation officer called out. Captain Montgomery datavised the flight computer, requesting the external sensor images. A long contrail of blue-white plasma stretched out across Amarisk's darkened eastern side, its starhead racing over the seaboard mountains. Already 50 kilometres high and rising, bright enough to send a backwash of lame phosphorescent light skating over the snow-capped peaks. Equon's flight computer acknowledged a communication channel opening. Ralph Hilch watched the hyped-up Kieran Sison starting to relax once he could datavise the starship again. It should have been something for Ralph to be thankful about, too. Communications had been impossible in the aftermath of the landing. Instead, he treated it like a non-event. He expected nothing less than the communications block to work. They were old, functional circuitry. Environment contamination warning lights were still winking amber, though the pilot had shut off the cabin's audio alarm. The air was dry and calciferous, scratching the back of Ralph's throat. Gravity was falling off as they soared ever higher above the ocean, curving up to rendezvous with the big colonist carrier. The prolonged bass roar of the reaction rockets was reducing. The air they breathed was bad enough, but the human atmosphere in the space plane's confined cabin was murderous. Gerald Skibbo sat at the rear of the cabin, shrunk down into his plastic seat, a zip cuff restraining each wrist against the armrests, his hands white-knuckled as he gripped the cushioning. He had been subdued since the airlock hatch closed, but then Will and Dean were looking hard for an excuse to rip his head off. Jenny's death had been fast, thank God, but very, very messy. Ralph knew he should be reviewing the memory of the ape analog creatures, gaining strategically critical information on the threat they faced, but he just couldn't bring himself to do it. Let the ESA office on Ombe study the memory sequence. They wouldn't be so emotionally involved. Jenny had been a damn good officer and a friend. The space plane's reaction drive cut off. Freefall left Ralph's stomach rising up through his chest. He accessed a nausea suppression program and quickly activated it. Huddled in his chair, Gerald Skibbo began to tremble as the forked strands of his filthy, blood-soaked beard waved about in front of his still-bleeding nose. Equon's hangar was a cylindrical chamber ribbed by metal struts. The walls were composed of shadows and crinkled silver blankets. The space plane, wings fully retracted, eased its squashed bullet nose through the open doors into the waiting clamping. Actuators slid catches into a circle of load sockets behind the radar dome, and the craft was drawn inside. 3 of Equan's security personnel, experts at handling troublesome ivets in freefall, swam into the cabin, coughing at the ash dust which filled the air. Will took the zip cuffs off Gerald Skibbo. "Run, why don't you?" he said silkily. Gerald Skibo gave him a contemptuous glance, which turned to outright alarm as he rose into the air, hands clawed frantically for a grip on the cabin ceiling. He wound up clutching a grab loop for dear life. The grinning security personnel closed in.